Blog Talk Radio.
That held me in one dimension kept me from entering into
quantum physics proves it exists. I had been there before. I visited daily in my dreams and sleep. How it differs from our present existence is that nothing in the parallel dimension is mundane. It is exciting, pleasurable, physically, intellectually, and spiritually stimulating without barriers, anchors, or any restrictions. We can win at everything we undertake. We can fly as high as our imaginations carry us. We can create anything we desire. This parallel dimension does exist, but we do not live in it completely. The reason we do not is because we are unable or unwilling to accept that it exists. Physicists and psychics have proven the existence of multiple dimensions and that everyone does enter this parallel dimension, but are unaware that they do. The trappings of their reality of work, children, home, daily stresses are constant reminders of what they must cope with. But on occasion, everyone experiences self-abandonment. Whatever we daydream, when we fall asleep in our beds, or when the world around us is quiet and we wonder about where we are and what we want to be, we enter the parallel dimension. Every time we enter this parallel dimension, we feel at ease and comfortable when we arrive. Our minds are focused on what we are doing or what to do there. It relieves us of a constant irritance in our lives, and for those special moments we enter that dimension, we are free. No one can deny they have been there. They simply do not understand where they have been. Nature has provided us with everything we need to enjoy this parallel dimension. It sings to us in the songs of birds. Dazzles our eyes with its beauty. It howls to us in the baying of wolves. It inspires us to understand the polarity of our lives as it mirrors our thoughts and attracts our attention by the marvels that it displays for us. We live in it and around it, but we will not accept it for the gift that it is. We too often destroy it or ignore it by our herd-like impulses. We run as masses of mindless animals in fear of frenzy toward some mirage of security. Like a herd of sheep or cattle, we are led by herders to fresh grazing fields or to slaughter. Herds could easily ignore their herders or turn on them and trample them. The herders are well trained to keep their herds behind fences and brand them with their mark, and how to keep the individual spirited bulls or rams isolated from the herd. They understand that the wild spirits of these great animals must not go unchallenged, or the herds will realize their collective and individual strength and become impossible to control. Governments try to control all media and knowledge, and oppress us and imprison us by destroying the mirror of our parallel dimension, replacing its image with bombs and pollution, death, misery, and fear. Self-abandonment is the way we protect ourselves from the mundane, grim realities. We were created with an escape hatch that allows us to always be free. Our self-made prison is dark. We believe we are in bondage and convince ourselves we are blind. We fail to see the escape hatch within us. It leads to the parallel dimension, to our ultimate freedom. I am. the extent that I am abandoning myself. I felt that was something I should read. Read something else that came to me the other day, and I wrote about it. It reminds me a great deal of what George used to talk about. George Dixon used to talk about the fractal consciousness, and how I guess in that fractal way, we're pieces of consciousness are actually whole consciousness. You know, they're actually, or pieces of the consciousness are always connected to the consciousness, so that, but they float and they fragment and they memories are so random. But certain things sometimes will target a reality, will target a truth, or target a vision that overwhelms you, and possibly clarifies the moment, or clarifies faith or hope or love, or I don't know. But the clarity is there. And I wrote this the other day as an observation. Actually, December 1st was when I wrote this. I believe it was Saturday. It is cold today, is the name of the essay, or the observation, I put it. December 1st is the meteorological first day of winter. It is cold today in Connecticut. 20 degrees, no sun, only gray, cold clouds. Why I felt the need to relay this to my readers, I'm not really sure. I decided to share a moment of being cold with someone who wants to read this article. Being physically cold often starts with your feet and hands and works its way through the rest of the body. Being emotionally cold is almost death-like. I have seen emotionally cold before, but more often I become emotionally inflamed when confronted by something or someone I dislike. It's a cold day, but it's been much colder, and so have I. I thought that my being cold today might be of interest to someone who is hot. Kind of strange, I know. But, maybe not so strange. I wanted to read one more that was kind of a fractal I can find it. The observations from bear with me a second here, I'm trying to find it. I thought it was right up here, but it's not. November snow. I know it's December 5th, but this came to me the other day, and I was thinking of what to write. But it was snowing this morning. The day is cold and gray, caught somewhere between dimensions. My thoughts are in a heavy snowfall where words fall silently and melt on the page. I remember walking at dawn in New York City one November long ago. The streets were deserted, dark and gray, The skyscrapers surrounded me. I was cold and hungry, lost. Until someone hung an open sign on their door, glass door. I smelled the aroma of fresh coffee. When the glass door seemed to burst into flames by the sun's rays reflecting against the window pane. I can see the light striking my eyes on that gray November day as I sip my coffee and wonder what to write about today. The essence of that poem to me was how I was sipping my coffee. I actually was looking outside and I had a sip of coffee and I suddenly got struck by this vision that I had years ago, many, many years ago. That was in New York City, probably the first time I ever went to New York City. I stayed overnight in a hotel. And one morning I got up, I was very early in. The hotel I was in didn't serve coffee or whatever it was, so I went out to get some. And I kind of got lost, you know. It was so early in the morning, there was nothing around. The streets were totally deserted. It was right at dawn. The sun was coming up. You could see the sun kind of rising the end of the street, the boulevard, or in New York City, they're not streets, they're huge. You have skyscrapers on each side of you, unbelievable. And, but that image never left me. I like went away for a while, but it never really left me. But all of a sudden, the smell of coffee and the gray November rang that memory into my head, and I couldn't forget it. I mean, I just saw it. And I remembered how the sun started coming up and directly hitting against that walk, that door, that glass door into the coffee shop there. It was like, wow. Bang, it just made me, made my eyes, made me close my eyes. It was so startling. But at the same time, it was so warm. The aroma of the coffee and from the restaurant just, permeated my senses. And it just embedded that moment or that reality in my emotional memory. And just the simple smell of coffee. My own coffee, as I was sipping it, jarred that incredible memory. And I decided it was significant enough for me, in my visual experience and kind of emotional experience as well, that, I wanted to publish it, I wanted to write about it, I wanted to mention it. And briefly, but possibly as a poem. An enjoyable kind of day, depending on where you are. But I thought about it. And I decided I would, I felt strongly to write an article on it. Personally, really, your words on it. I wrote this on Thanksgiving morning, or day, I guess it was. The television broke today. I got it 3 years ago, and of course it would have to stop working on Thanksgiving, 2 years past its warranty. I always enjoy watching the Macy Day Parade and the dog show that's on after the parade. These are traditional American Turkey Day pastimes, including watching football and stuffing our turkeys and stuffing our stomachs. Maybe not having a television on Thanksgiving is a blessing. It makes me inconvenienced and ticked off, but appreciative of everyone who doesn't have a television or who isn't celebrating Thanksgiving with their families. It can be a sad day, depending where you are. If you are like millions of unfortunate Americans today, you may be having your Thanksgiving dinner at a soup kitchen. It would be too cynical and cold to not think about all who are suffering today. 50 million Americans are dependent on food stamps, and yet all the media can focus on this week is shopping on Black Friday. For my international audience, who may have wondered what this American term means, Black Friday is the day after Thanksgiving. But all the retail outlets in the country offer their best sales, and Americans go shopping crazy. It's a buyer's bacchanal. Oddly enough, I guess it's the best day of the year to have a broken television. Television sales are at their best prices of the year. I wonder today if anyone outside of the United States could understand what a crazy time of year it is in America. It is a national holiday that honors and eats a turkey. It is also a holiday when Americans' obsession to buy drives them into a national frenzy. Americans' patience is at its all-time low, and American credit cards debt increases tenfold. It is a prime example of society, or rather of societal insanity. But now, until shortly after New Year's Day, Christmas is another insane American holiday that was meant to celebrate the birth of Christ, but has become the great American celebration of consumer madness. Any thought of Christ or religion during Christmas in America is secondary next to the thought of what to buy Dad and Mom and the kids for Christmas and booking a plane flight for the holiday. A great holiday tradition in America is to spend the Thanksgiving and Christmas week or weekend with relatives. It's a fond tradition. However, it often leads to overindulgence in spending, eating, drinking, anger, and interfamily rivalries. So often, many Americans will leave their homes and drive for hours or days on overcrowded highways and have to wait in airports for delayed or overbooked flights. But they all seem to do it unbegrudgingly. For the one time of the year, they have so much fun. Societal insanity isn't a strong enough description for what Americans go through this time of year. To my American readers, I wish you all good luck. A happy Thanksgiving. And to all my international readers, I wish you peace and sanity. And that was Thanksgiving. That was my Thanksgiving thought. I can't help but indulge myself here in this. I've been kind of busy, you can tell. I've been writing daily almost. But every so often, I find myself running into trouble. Am I right? Sometimes I just have a problem communicating, you know, getting my thoughts out in all the proper way. And there's a name for that, astrological name for that, and it's called Mercury in retrograde. That's what this article is about. I wrote this last month, about 3 weeks ago. There are times in everyone's life when everything seems to stop. It's a dreaded time that we all hope is temporary, but sometimes it can seem permanent. My recent problems are quite petty compared to the problems of billions of other people. I often wonder when misfortune happens to me if I am under some kind of cosmic cloud. This is a time when communications are restricted or cut off. An astrological term for this is when Mercury is in retrograde. I am a believer in astrology, just as I believe in many of the divining arts. However, over the many years I have found divination to be a curse more than a blessing. In many cases, divination by astrology or tarot will forecast misfortune. Some believe this is an aid in offsetting the misfortune, but knowing in advance what may happen, however, I found that often these predictions of misfortune can become self-fulfilling prophecies. Also, the prediction of good fortune can often become disappointments. Prior to my friend and astrologer passing away several years ago, I would call him when I wanted to know what was happening or what was about to happen. He would say that I should watch out for certain things, or that it was a good time planetarily to do certain things. It often served as a comfort to me knowing if I was about to have a good run of luck, or if I wasn't. I found that I began. Also, the prediction of good fortune can often become disappointments. Prior to my friendship with my friend and astrologer passing away several years ago, I would call him when I wanted to know what was happening or what was about to happen. He would say that I should watch out for certain things, or that it was a good time planetarily to do certain things. Sorry, I repeated myself there, but it often served as a comfort to me knowing if I was about to have a good run of luck or if I wasn't. I found that I became somewhat dependent on his predictions and wondered if I hadn't known about their possibility of happening, if they would have happened anyway, or not at all. My knowledge of astrology was and is limited to what my friend taught me. I was taught the tarot by a tarot reader and psychic and realized that I had some ability at interpreting the future. However, I soon became dependent upon a tarot whenever I had a question for my future. It's difficult for a tarot reader or astrologer or any diviner to not become dependent on his art or science to the extent that he or she cannot make a move into the future or a major decision without first consulting the cards or the stars. I would be wrong to say I've lost faith in divination, but I have lost faith in my ability to predict the future. I have become more of a believer in trusting the unknown. That may sound strange to some, but I would rather put my faith in my promise and manifestation of my goals instead of placing faith in some magic deck of cards or someone's interpretation of the stars and planets. As I ponder the reasons for my present struggle, I am beginning to recognize the fatal and favorable patterns that appear. If I consider all the faults and potential problems based on current faults and problems, I will often revise my plans simply on the premise that they might fail. It is simply a matter of my attitude and belief that things will get better and opportunities will present themselves. If I do not keep this belief while I am planning a goal, I become riddled with doubt and fear of failure. Ah, the great cosmic cloud of confusion hasn't completely disappeared, but my cosmic connection of hope and achievement are becoming clearer. I just received a much-delayed phone call that was cleared a great obstacle for me. I guess Mercury is no longer in retrograde. And that happens sometimes, and we can't really explain it, why it happens, but it does. Where communications just seem to get down, you know? What can I tell you? I was going to go back a little ways, but I really didn't want to get political tonight, if I could help it. Actually, this is actually old news, you know, if you will. But when the in the Israelis were pelleting, you know, or bombing the hell out of Palestine, or the Gaza, I should say. And it occurred to me, it's always occurred to me, who will help Gaza? Who will help Gaza? And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Because it appears that no one wants to help Gaza. And I guess what confused me most is why the Arab countries will not help Gaza. Now, maybe I'm naive, or maybe I'm just foolish, which, you know, it wouldn't count out. But I've read enough and been around long enough to have seen the goings-on in Palestine, and to see the goings-on in Zionist Israel. And, you know, come on. I wrote this when they were bombing the hell out of, you know, before they made the peace agreement, as well as before the UN just adopted their membership, you know. They're now members of the UN, Palestinians. And I think it's critical. It was critical. There's so many things that are so timely. That's why I always date every post that I put up. It's always dated, and with two dates, actually. I usually have two dates on the sheet. But it's critical, and if you put these articles in a timely fashion, and then you see what happened afterwards, how relevant, actually, this became, and proof in some way, some odd way, but proof nevertheless, that if you throw an idea out into the world, someone somewhere is going to grab it. They're going to they might hear it, or somebody might tell them something, and they might sense it, but nevertheless, it'll come to them. And Emerson talks greatly about that, you know, is if there's something you are meant to hear, you'll hear it, regardless of where it's from or how far around the world or you know, I'm a remote. It may be, if it was meant for you to hear, you'll hear it. And based on that, wonderful. I mean, I hope to be able to read a little bit tonight. But before I get too off the subject, I just wanted to, I'd like to possibly talk about this one. Iskon, who will help Gaza? I am confounded by the Arab countries not helping the Palestinian people. Turkey and Egypt appear to be coming to an economic agreement for aid. However, it isn't the economic aid or issue that is so urgent, as is their military aid that is needed. Israel is a rogue state. Everyone but the U.S. agrees to that. But as a human being of conscience, I cannot sit back and be silent about the worldwide indifference to the plight of the Palestinians. I have written on the Palestinian subject many times and have been criticized for it and have been called a racist for my anti-Israeli views. However, I believe that anyone who does not speak out against the genocide and illegal occupation of the Palestinian people are cold-blooded sociopaths or simply ignorant of the entire Israeli-Palestinian conflict. For the U.S. to ally itself with Israel is unconscionable. Israel is a Zionist state that has illegally occupied Palestine for over 40 years. The ruthless occupation has caused the deaths and displacement of over 1 million Palestinians. Hamas is the democratically elected government of the Palestinian people and has been declared by the U.S. and Israel governments as terrorists. The only terrorists in this equation are Israel and the U.S. The U.S. government is entrenched with Israeli spies and lobbyists. Zionists sympathizers control the U.S. media and the media of most industrialized countries. Voices of anti-Israeli criticism are silenced and ignored in the U.S. The only anti-Israeli and American voices heard in the world are from the Arab countries. The incredible irony of this is that even those countries refuse to help the Palestinian people or be militarily or economically involved in the aid of the Palestinians. Iran continues to state its concern and support and are allied with Hamas and the Hezbollah of Lebanon, but they have done little, if nothing, in the assaults against Palestine or Lebanon by the Israelis. If the Arab nations, including the Arab Brotherhood, now controlling Egypt, do not help Palestine in this war with Israel, then they will soon be Israel's next target for expansion. How cowardly are these Arab brothers if they will not defend the legitimate right of Palestinians to exist? I know from all I've learned of Arab history that the Arab people are proud, great, and defiant, and have been dominated by European and American governments for centuries. If millions of Arabian people can take to the streets and arm themselves against the U.S. for something as simple as an anti-Islam video or book, why can they not see the greater abomination of genocide and hatred being waged against them by Israel and its allies? My temperament would not be tolerated at the UN or in any tepid peace negotiations. Neither would my writings on the Israeli-Palestinian war be considered by any pro-Israel state or statesman. It doesn't matter to me if my words are considered by them. However, I believe my words reveal themselves to the eyes of all readers with any concern for the Palestinian people. The Arab people must rise up in aid to the Palestinians. It is the only way that the illegal occupation of Palestine by Israel will end. And feelings. This issue. It's just, man, you know, where the hell do they get off? You know what I mean? Where the hell do people, where do this, does this country get off defending a country like Israel? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I was going to say a few words from Emerson's work, but I think I'll end tonight with his words, but because they are so great, and they've inspired so much of my way of thinking. I have another essay that I wrote. Back in November 16th. It's funny, I can remember writing this like it was yesterday, but it was about 3 weeks ago. It's called Everyone, Almost Everyone is a Revolutionist. Yeah, I believe that. Happening more and more and more. Almost anyone has the potential to be a revolutionist. If they are not one already, revolutionists understand what is happening around them and are well aware that some of them know more than others about the reality of the situation. Some of us are committed to changing the corrupt system, yet we are held back by others who fear change and refuse to hear radical ideas. I, as many of my readers, have faced these people and tried in some way to talk to them about current events or even the last election. Revolutionists question what is going on in government and in their environment and are trying to counter these atrocities with protest and petition. Those opposed to reform or revolution seem fixed in their ideas and political beliefs, though most know very little or nothing about any of the political and economic philosophies they profess to believe so ardently in. So why does anyone take them seriously? This is because they are resisting any and all change, whether their lives are poor or rich, healthy or ill. They insist that nothing is better than what they already have, and nothing should change. Anyone who questions their system of government is considered a revolutionist, and possibly even a terrorist, depending on who we talk to. Americans were revolutionaries, and somehow over the last 250 years they have become a nation of followers and herded like cattle and sheep to be slaughtered by bankers and corporations and their lackey politicians. It is vital to understand what a revolutionist revolts, that a revolutionist revolts against an established system. Revolutionist actions can be done individually or collectively, but they must be done to resist and prevent the onslaught against their freedoms, individual liberty, and economic survival. How can revolution be achieved under the watchful eye of the government? There is only one way available to everybody, and that is to resist. American revolutionists must resist the lies and corruption that we see around us. We must insist on non-GMO foods. We must insist on the abolishment of the Federal Reserve and the establishment of our government issuing its own currency. We must insist that we make-believe world of marketeers be dismantled and that all products sold to us must be safe to consume. We must insist that the defense budget be substantially reduced and that we end all wars in foreign countries. We must insist that our people have jobs that pay a livable wage. We must insist that our media is truthful and stop their ceaseless lies and propaganda. We must insist that Israel be cast off as an ally of America and seen for the genocidal state that it is. We must insist on reducing our demand for electrical power and fossil fuels. And demand that our voices be heard. But our voices are heard. They are just ignored. A revolutionary, one who is in a revolution, demands to be heard. A revolution is the demand for a major change. Revolutions begin with one individual and grows exponentially until the changes are made. Every one of us who understand we are being severely manipulated and abused by our system and society must stand up against it, either physically protesting or intellectually protesting, or writing or voicing our concerns and ideas for a growing audience. How can a revolution be achieved under the watchful eye of the government? This is odd. I'm sorry that I'm hesitant, but for some reason I wasn't sure where I should begin this or finish reading this. Those opposed to reform or revolution seem fixed in their ideas and political beliefs, though most know very little but are nothing about the political economic policies they profess. Yeah, I've been through that. How can revolution be achieved under the watchful eye of the government? There is only one way available to everyone, and that is to resist. American revolutionists must resist the lies and corruption that we see around us. We must insist on non-GMO foods. We must insist on the abolishment of the Federal Reserve and the establishment of the government issuing its own currency, and we must insist that the make-believe world of marketeers be dismantled, and that all products sold to us must be safe to consume. We must insist that the defense budget be substantially reduced and that we will end all wars in foreign countries. We must insist that our people have jobs that pay a livable wage. We must insist that our media be truthful and stop their ceaseless lies and propaganda. We must insist that Israel be cast off as an ally of America and be seen for the rogue genocidal state that it is. We must insist on reducing our demand for electrical power and fossil fuels and demand that our voices be heard. But our voices are heard. They are just ignored. A revolutionary, one who is in a revolution, demands to be heard. A revolution is the demand for major change. Revolutions begin with one individual and grow exponentially until changes are made. every one of us who understand we are being severely manipulated and abused by our system and society must stand up against it, either physically protesting or intellectually protesting by writing or voicing our concerns and ideas to a growing audience. Never in known history has humanity had such remarkable communication tools available to individuals. Tools such as the internet or broadcast medium, we can all now verbally protest and influence a wide audience of like thinkers immediately to take revolutionary actions. Christianity began as an idea of a single individual who could no longer stand the hypocrisy and corruption of his own religion. His stand against their system cost him his life. But his revolutionary work is immortal and has been the basis of countless worldwide revolutions for the last 2,000 years. We must be like Christ. Martin Luther, Martin Luther King Jr., Mandela, Gandhi, Washington, or Jefferson each created a national and international movement that created a revolution. We respect and honor these men today and have mainstreamed their revolutionary ideas into our educational system. And yet we fail to teach our children what these men really stood for and why they are so important to the world. Our government and school systems condemn individual resistance to authority and yet teach the history and honor their lives in the world's greatest revolutionaries. There is a great disconnect in these methods of education and government, and the thoughtful and intelligent person, I, as many others who value their independence and freedom of thought, are dismissed by the fools in power, powerful positions who refuse to listen to opinions and facts that are opposed to their own opinions. A revolutionist is anyone who is angry enough and committed enough to resist the forces that imprison him by corruption and ignorance, and does all in his power to change a system of government and a society before it plunges off a cliff. And with that, I'll leave you with that tonight. There is one more. It's a short one that I have. Now, I'll make this the last one tonight. It's called Wow and OMG. And these are two terms that we've heard there all the time. And I wrote a very short observation. Last month, November 16th, actually. A dictionary description of the word wow. Scottish interjection, a natural expression of amazement. The verb meaning, overwhelming with delight or amazement, is first recorded in 1924 American English slang, used as a noun meaning unqualified success since 1920. The old interjection has a new popularity in the early 1900s and again during the 1960s. And the use of the word wow quite often lately, I use the word wow quite often lately because I have been so amazed at things that I've been seeing and hearing. The number of weird environmental, political, economic events and remarkable individual human feats that have occurred in the last few years is truly remarkable. What can anyone say about them other than wow? The original Scottish version of the word has taken on a more general translation now, referring not only to something good happening, but also to something very bad happening. What can anyone say other than wow at the devastation caused by Hurricane Sandy? often used phrase commonly abridged is OMG, short for Oh My God. I find this statement significant because it is used to account for the unimaginable and credits the Creator. When someone is without words or stunned by someone or some amazing event, either joyful or painful, we use this phrase more often than any other time to describe our pleasure, pain, or shock. I don't know exactly why we feel the need to call out God's name, but even in our most personal moments of pleasure or disaster, we say, "Oh my God." This phrase obviously connects our thoughts to the sublime or divine by expressing our joy, pleasure, pain, or horror outwards into an infinite call for your understanding or thanks. The letter OMG, letters OMG, have now become commercialized in a generic universal phrase to sell something or to attract attention to something or someone. It might have originated as a prayer, and for many who use the phrase, it still is a way of invoking divine guidance to understand our emotional reaction to something we do not understand. As the world spins way faster towards the new age of Aquarius, and time and space as we know it is virtually disappear, new marvels will be often discovered and learned. And the word wow and the phrase oh my God may become the only word and phrase humanity will be able to speak as we discover who we really are and who we are destined to be. And with those words, I'm going to end tonight's show. I want to thank you all for listening. And please check out my website. I appreciate it. LASpillShow.org. And in the meantime, thanks for joining us.